C1C. Number 10B.
She goes on and gives another rule to do that. She says, hold thought steadfastly to the enduring, the good, and the true. And then you get the fatherhood sense. If you do that, then you, what do you get? And you will bring these into your experience proportionably to their occupancy of your thought. Isn't it beautiful how she goes just always one little step further. First she introduces what is really the law of life at the point of fatherhood of the idea, and says, you know, what you entertain in consciousness, that will be your experience. Okay, that's the law. Therefore, if you hold in your consciousness something sickly, okay, you get all the sickness you like. Okay. Therefore, are you going on all your life doing that? Or are you wise enough to say, oh, in that case, I'm going to change my standpoint. In that case, I'm going to change the quality of my thought. And so I see then, as a second step, that there is a necessity for changing the model. She doesn't say it's necessary that instead of being sick, you are healthy. She doesn't say that at all. She says, instead of having a sick mentality, you better see that you have a healthy mentality. Instead of entertaining sickly thoughts, it's better that you entertain healthy thoughts. So, we come to that second step that says, okay, then I see the necessity of changing my mentality, and nobody can stop me of changing my mentality. That is independent on anything. That's independent on the body, that's independent on matter, that's independent of anything. I can change my mentality. That's my great freedom of manhood. Okay, all right, I change my mentality. Then comes the third little step that says, but how are you going to do that in a practical way? What should you do in order to change your mentality? And so she brings in, one is look away from the body and look into truth and love. Another way is hold thought steadfastly to the enduring, the good, and the true. And if you do that, you bring forth your own offspring, namely, then you will be the creator of your own healthy experience. Yes? And you will bring these into your experience proportionably to their occupancy of your thought. Isn't that easy? Then she goes on, and I'm wondering if she goes on giving me other indications, other rules to do it. And I read, the effect of mortal mind on health and happiness is seen in this. Oh, I see. Now she gives me an example. It's seen in this. If one turns away from the body, you see, she repeats, so to say, what she said on line 2. If you turn away from the body with such absorbed interest as to forget it, look away from the body, forget it, the body experiences no pain, the effect of it. So again, she gives another example and says, well, do that with a highly absorbed interest and just try not to think about the body, to forget about the body, not to argue with the body, not to have a nice long conversation about the body and talk back to the body and the body talking back to you. Just forget all about it. See, that's another rule. Then the body experiences no pain. So it is again in the same vein as before. Then she brings from line 11 right down to the end of the paragraph 20 illustration, which therefore does not bring any new information into the subject. It's just illustrating such a case. And there, an illustration is never an addition of information. It's just taking an information that is being stated and just show one out of millions examples for it. So she took this one, which you know, under the strong impulse of her desire to perform his part, the noted actor was accustomed night after night to go upon the stage and sustain his appointed task, walking about as actively as the youngest member of the company. This old man was so lame that he hopped every day to the theater and sat aching in his chair till his cue was spoken, a signal which made him as oblivious. Now you have the obliviousness. To be oblivious to the body, it's the rule not to think about the body, to be oblivious to the arguments of the body, which made him as oblivious of physical infirmity as if he had inhaled chloroform, though he was in the full possession of his so-called senses. So you can see this is just one nice example. It's always that what we have to deal with students. You tell a student a terrific big fundamental principle statement, and if he can't quite get it, he says, could you give me an example? And then you have to give him an example, which is a pity. We should come and we should be able to train thought to the point where we should not give an example, because every example is narrowing down. Narrowing down the principle. Makes it narrow. See? 2 and 2 is 4. But if we only understand 2 fishes and 2 fishes to be 4 fishes and learn that, then when we have 2 bananas and 2 bananas, we don't know how many bananas there are. If we can just stick to the principle of it and not to the example, it's much better. But sometimes the mentality of the student is just not yet trained always to see the applicability of a principle or of a rule. So we go on. And Phil, I wonder if she still tells us how we can exchange the old model for the new model. So actually she says, detach sense from the body or matter. See, another way of getting away from the wrong model, which is only a form of human belief, and you may learn the meaning of God or good, and the nature of the immutable and immortal. So again, it's a rule how you can do it, detach sense from the body. Or another rule, breaking away from the mutations of time and sense. And you see again how to break away? You will neither lose the solid objects and ends of life, nor your own identity. You don't lose anything. Another rule is coming, fixing your gaze on the reality supernal. That's another rule. You will rise to the spiritual consciousness of being. Therefore, we rise above the old model. Even as a bird which has burst from the egg and preens its wings for a skyward flight. Yeah. So we have read a whole page, haven't we? And the piece of it is always the same. It's always saying how, therefore so to say the rules, how do you in practical terms exchange the wrong model for the right model? And then she gives all these indications. So you have it first. Look away from the body and look into truth and love. Hold thoughts steadfastly on the enduring and the good. Fix your gaze on the reality supernal. That's the positive way. The other one is turn away from the body with absorbed interest so as to forget it. Forget it. Detach sense from the body or matter. Break away from the mutation of time and sense. You see? Then she said you get your good results. So, if you have read that whole page of around about 32 lines, actually you can distill it into just five, six rules that can be stated very easily. Very easily. And in that way you crystallize out of the whole thing that which is really the piece of it, the core of it, and it sticks in your mind. You will never forget it. You will never forget it. So we go on and still feel, perhaps he gives further rules. So we read on. We should forget our bodies in remembering God and the human race. So this would substantiate again another rule, forgetting. She already had said we should be oblivious, huh? So it's a repeat, so to say. You see, that's another thing. When one writes a book, and you go on, especially when you write the book in which you reason with your reader, just not state a nice story that he doesn't have to reason out, but when you reason with the reader, from time to time you come to a new point which you want to make clear, and in order that you feel he's prepared for that new vision or that new statement, you repeat the basis that is necessary for the new. Therefore you go back to what you have been saying before and say, from there now I lead the reader to a further point. So even now that we see, we know now that here starts another subtone, we must not forget that in that subtone as a bridge we may find a repeat of the preceding tone, but very soon she will then bring in the new point. So she says, God demands of man every hour. And you can see, here comes in a new point. It demands of man every hour. Now she comes to the point and says, you know, this thing is at the point of isness. It is actually always there. And therefore it demands every hour, as if she would say, always pray, always be at that point of awareness. Huh? This is important, that you don't have periods where you're aware of it and periods where you're not aware of it. So she brings in something new, namely the isness of fatherhood, that this is a state of being and not a temporary state. So God demands of man every hour in which to work out the problem of being. Wonderful. We have to work out the problem of being. And it demands the isness of consciousness every hour. This is not something which we can do on Sunday morning, or something which we can do before we go to bed, because there on the little table next to the bed is science and health, and so we better read a little bit, and it's so nice to get to go asleep with science and health on on the little table next to the bed, whatever it's called in English, that table. It is a present, constant consciousness. That's what you want to bring out. Consecration to good. You see, consecration means like concentration. It is giving everything at every time to the idea. No student can make any progress in Christian Science without consecration. We really need to be consecrated, committed. The more we are totally committed, the more the idea of being can grow within us. We can't play with science. Science is not a hobby, which we have somehow next to our main interest. And that as a sideline we have Christian Science. As our main interest we have the science of being, and as a sideline we have our work, our jobs, our things to do. That main point is dominating our everyday life, whatever we do then. But that's our commitment. So consecration to good does not lessen man's dependence on God, but heightens it. We always get nearer and nearer to God. So you can see, somehow the tone changes here. Instead of just showing how to turn away from the false model and turn towards the right model, it now says, when you have turned to the right model, what are you going to do? Are you just contemplating it here and there? Or does that demand your whole being? The wholeness of your life. So consecration to God will always bring you nearer to God. Neither does consecration diminish man's obligation to God, naturally, but shows the paramount necessity of meeting them, of meeting this obligation. We really are getting at work now. We are, what is your expression? Steeped in the work or stooped, steeped in the work? Steeped in the work of Christian Science. Not on the surface. Just a little bit dancing on the surface when it pleases us. We really are getting right into it. So it becomes our own being. And no more a circumference of our being. Christian Science takes note from the perfection of God, we know that, but it ascribes to Him the entire glory. Therefore we have to do that the same. We have to ascribe, therefore, in our consecration, everything to being. We are not studying Christian Science so that we get a better job, or that we have a better health, or that we have this and that better. We are devoting and consecrating ourselves to Christian Science because that is our very being. It's our very being. We have no being besides God. So our study becomes quite different, what I said right at the beginning. If we begin to see Christian Science as a science, that's a new paradigm. And that new paradigm also gives us another sense of demonstration. The sense of demonstration we get here is not, how can I manage my human life better so that I have a better job, a better income, a better house, a better this and a better that. But it gets a higher sense of demonstration. Now, how can I demonstrate that I am what I am? My beingness. That is the higher sense of demonstration. Most students which we have, I must say, have not many difficulties. They shouldn't have, because the moment they begin to get into the rhythm of science, we are working in the preventive art of Christian Science. We do not really consecrate our life to Christian Science so that we can get sick, and that when we are sick that we can help ourselves. This is a kind of animal magnetism I always point that out. If our whole intention in Christian Science is to heal, and to heal better, this is animal magnetism. Because you cannot heal and heal better without having sick people. So you ask for sick people. You ask to be sick. That's why so many Christian Scientists are always sick, and constantly need their practitioner. Because their whole attitude toward Christian Science is asking for trouble, so that the trouble can be demonstrated, so that afterwards we can say, I made a wonderful demonstration, I have a wonderful practitioner. You know, that practitioner is just terrific. And they brag about their practitioner and brag about their demonstration, whereas they should be bragging that they never need to solve a problem. It's quite enough consecration to find our being and to manifest our whole being. That's the point. The others are really only the science following. But if we make the science following as the main purpose, is animal magnetism. No matter if they like to hear it or not, but it is. It's asking for trouble. So, where have we been? Christian Science takes note from the perfection of God, but it ascribes to Him the entire glory. By putting off the old man with his deeds, mortals put on immortality. Can you see it's again showing that in that fourth period of life here, the fourth tone of life here, life as science, it shows that actually our fatherhood sense is directed to the point where we are not only the circumference of our being, but actually the very being itself, the center of being, and not only the demonstration of being. We are being itself, small b. We go on. We cannot fathom the nature and quality of God's creation by diving into the shallows of mortal belief. Again, it's a question, how can we concentrate ourselves so that we go to the deep-rooted nature of being? We must reverse our feeble flutterings, our efforts to find life and truth in matter, and rise above the testimony of the material sense. So again, another rule, which is repeating, so to say, what that said before, but she goes on, above the mortal to the immortal idea of God. For the first time she brings here now in that actually our aim is to be the immortal idea of God. These, here you have the piece of it, these clearer, higher views inspire the God-like man, for what? To reach the absolute center and circumference of his being. Okay. Then you are in it. Then you are that high ideal yourself. So it starts out first to look at the perfect model. And if we concentrate ourselves to that perfect model of being becomes us because it goes on within our consciousness, so that finally we find we are that perfect model, we are the idea of God. And that idea of God is not only the circumference, but is the center of our being, and the circumference of our being. It's the center of our being because it's the source of our being, and it's the circumference. We experience that center, that core of being, in infinite individual manifestation of that being. The piece of it is the center, and the ripples around that center, you know, the circumference with all various, you call them ripples, anything, are showing you the effects of this central core. Like when you throw a stone into the quiet water, it's just the center. It's always a center, it's just a point of center, but the ripples that are being produced by it are infinite. Everyone is different. Everyone becomes bigger and bigger. But the center is responsible for all the ripples round about it. So our fatherhood sense, which says to us, we can actually entertain in consciousness the true idea of God constantly. That's our ideal. Then we become that ideal itself, the center and circumference. We find our being. Job said, I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now mine eyes seeth thee. Can you see again the nowness of it? Now I am it. Mortals will echo Job's thought when the supposed pain and pleasure of matter cease to predominate. You get the great sense of isness in that last tone. They will then drop the false estimate of life and happiness, of joy and sorrow, and attain the bliss of loving unselfishly, working patiently and conquering all that is unlike God. Then comes the summary of that, says, all right then, therefore, starting from a higher standpoint, now your starting point is a higher standpoint. Did you see all up to this in life, in this lifetime, it was saying, it started out with mortal thought transmits its own image and so on. Started right down there, huh, with mortal thought, not with a high standpoint. And showed step by step how we should exchange that imperfect model for a perfect model, then showed how we can exchange it, how we can get away from the wrong, so that we have the right, and finally see that therefore that right should be our starting point, and not the point to attain. Yeah? Yeah, terrific that. What that the woman has written is terrific. Starting from a higher standpoint, one rises spontaneously. Even as light emits light without effort. For where our treasures is, there will your heart be also. Where your consciousness is, there your love will be also, there your being will be also, there your experience will be also. I think it's beautiful.